Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and John Freiberger is back with us. He's a registered home inspector. Lots of years of experiences in the home industry. He specializes in energy design and restoring older homes. And we're going to talk with him today, at least to begin the show, by talking about asbestos. Can be found in your home, it may be in your home. And so you might want to know how to have it removed, or if you should have it removed. And, of course, we'll take your other home improvement questions as well as we move along today. You can join us at 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. John Freiberger, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Pleased to be back with you, Larry.
Asbestos is actually a natural substance, if I'm not mistaken. Why is it so dangerous?
Well, it is a naturally occurring fiber. There's 8, 9, or 12 different types of asbestos, and the types of asbestos are usually defined by the length of the fiber. Chrysotile is the longest fiber. I can't remember what the shortest one is, but there are some that are very short. The problem with it is that it never decomposes. It basically, it's like a glass crystal. I think from the volcano in Hawaii, we're hearing about don't breathe around the volcano. There's hair or something.
Yeah, yes.
And basically, it's glass fibers in the air. So what happens with asbestos is if you breathe it in, it's like breathing in little tiny daggers. And it'll lodge in lung cells and puncture lung cells. And it never decays, never rots, never dissolves. So it's there forever. So what happens is if you're lucky, you get asbestosis, which basically means you've got a whole bunch of scars in your lung and your air sacs aren't working very well. If you're unlucky, like many shipyard workers and HVAC contractors, you get mesothelioma, a cancer of the lining of the lung, which I think is 100% fatal. And the only known cause for mesothelioma that I know about is asbestos.
Man. And asbestos, if I'm not mistaken, it's not completely banned in the U.S., I don't think.
No, it is not completely banned, but for it is, in theory, not in consumer products. Now, I'm pretty sure it's not in consumer products made in the United States, but we import a lot of things from places where the environmental and consumer protection laws are not as strict.
Yeah.
So I would be concerned about things like foreign drywall. And good heavens, we've had problems with foreign drywall. So there's always an issue. But in my career, since I worked on so many older houses, I had to really become aware of the EPA, you know, OSHA rules having to do with asbestos because, Larry, it is almost everywhere.
And, well, where do we find it in the homes?
Well, the one that a lot of people are familiar with is VAT tile, vinyl asbestos tile. Most of it is 8 or 9 inch tile. We see it in basements and houses all over the place. And the thing about asbestos, Larry, is a wonderful product. I mean, it doesn't break down.
Yeah.
You use it as a binder. So you add it to cement, you get a stronger cement. You add it to vinyl tile, you get great vinyl tile. So a lot of houses will see vinyl tile in the basement. We go up in the attic, another place we see a lot of it, and a fairly dangerous form of it is in vermiculite in attics. Now, not all vermiculite has asbestos, but the vermiculite that was mined at the Grace Mine in Montana has a lot of asbestos in it, and it was known under the brand of Zonolite, Z-O-N-O-L-I-T-E. What's nice about Zonolite is they have a remediation trust. So if it's in your attic, you can go to the Zonolite Attic Insulation Trust, which you can look up online. You can also call them at their 844 number or email them at info@zaitrust.com, and they will tell you how to apply for funds to remediate the asbestos in your attic. I did a home inspection, I think it was in Evansville. The house had mice, and the mice lived in the attic, but then they wandered up and down between the four floors carrying asbestos insulation with them.
Oh.
So we had asbestos everywhere in the house, and they finally decided they had to demolish the house.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. So, and I think I had it in one of my, the homes, previous homes that I had. I think I had it in the wrapping of some pipes.
That's another very common is if you have steam or hot water pipes, we had two types of asbestos elements there. The first was a what we call air cell asbestos pipe wrap. And if you look at it from the end, it looks like it's corrugated cardboard. So it's got that, you know, that sine wave. And the outside of that was usually covered then with a white, like a linen or a cotton sort of fabric. And that stuff is not terrible because it's covered. It's fairly easy to remove. But the problem is when they had corners, they didn't have pre-made corners. So what the heating guys did is they took plaster of Paris and asbestos, mixed them together with water in a bucket, and wadded them into the corners and the T's.
Oh.
That stuff is highly friable. So there's four classes of asbestos, and the class one is a highly friable one. And that stuff is extremely dangerous. So if people have that in their basement, that should be removed. What they often do with the air cell, if it's in decent shape, is they will encapsulate it with an approved encapsulant paint. And that works just fine. If the fibers can't get out, we're okay.
Yeah, I think that's what we wound up doing in my home at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just covered it up, essentially.
And in many cases, covering it up is safer than removing it because the work you have to do to be safe in removing it, because when you take it apart, it can become friable. So I generally, as long as in decent shape, I generally advise people to have a remediation firm come in and simply seal it. And it'll be good for another 100 years because, as I said, it just doesn't deteriorate.
So how do you look at your home and say, well, how am I going to figure out if I've got asbestos in my home?
Well, you can't. Well, you can. I mean, you can look in your attic and see if you've got this grainy vermiculite stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, you can do that. You can see if you have the pipe wrap. You can see if you have transite board. So a transite board is a hard board made with asbestos. It was often used, like next to the boiler or where the hot water heater vent pipe goes through the wall. They put a sheet of transite board up there. And usually it's a gray board. And it's like the vinyl asbestos tile. It's considered to be a class 3 or a class 2 asbestos because unless you break it, there's nothing friable.
Hmm.
And, of course, so many people, houses built in the 50s and 60s, have the VAT tile. But one thing that I've found a lot of that people don't know about, and I think we should highlight a little bit in this discussion, is sheet vinyl flooring.
Hmm.
So you've got this vinyl flooring in your kitchen is put in 1980, and the backing of it is 100% chrysotile asbestos. So the remodeling contractor comes in and he rips it out and he sprays asbestos all over your house. So whenever I saw vinyl flooring that was approximately of that age, and I think some of it, you know, it sat on the shelf even after you couldn't make it. So some of it is even installed in the early 80s. I would ask that that stuff be sampled and then tested to see if it had asbestos content.
Wow. What about paint?
Paint, generally, no. But when you have drywall, drywall tape and drywall compound often had asbestos in it. And again, because it was a nice bonder. And what the EPA rules are is if your house has asbestos-containing drywall mud on the walls, the entire system is considered to be asbestos. So, Larry, even window putty had asbestos in it.
Oh.
Window putty, fortunately, is class one because it's flexible and it's non-friable. So a consumer can pretty much look for the floor tile, the pipe wrap. You can look at the vermiculite in the attic. You're not going to try to test the putty. I think if you're doing a major remodeling on a house that was built in 1956 and the contractor said, okay, I'm going to rip out these walls for you, I think I'd say, let's get an asbestos test done on the drywall. just in case. Because once you pollute a house, the cleanup is pretty bad.
And expensive.
And expensive. Very expensive. Because you have to use a certified contractor who is following the OSHA rules and the EPA rules for disposal. And it's a bunch of money. I mean, this is going to specialized landfills. There's extra trucking costs. Air curtains have to be put up. Negative pressure fans, often full-face respirators. So it's really worth testing and doing things correctly.
So let's say I've got these tiles in my basement and I find out there's asbestos in the tiles. Mm-hmm. Do I have to take them? Well, if I left them there and covered it with a rug or something?
Well, if they are not broken, they are just fine. And there are companies that make EPA-approved encapsulant paint.
Hmm.
So, and you can, I think you can buy the paint yourself and apply it. And basically, it's like a mastic sort of paint, goes over the top. So if you do have some cracked tiles, because cracked tiles, in theory, are class 2 and are friable, then you've covered it, it's nice and safe. And then if it's a basement, I suggest using something like the LVT, the luxury vinyl tile, which they make in thicker grades to go over concrete and old VAT. Lay that down, and you should never have to worry about it again.
Our guest today, John Freiberger, registered home inspector of Freiberger and Associates. We've started talking about asbestos with him today. Questions about that, or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. Or if you have another home improvement question, certainly you could join in as well. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Trina LaSousa, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. Great to have John with us today. We're zeroing in a little on asbestos, but we can take other home improvement questions as well at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. John, what about shingles?
Well, that's one you can see on somebody else's house, can't you? You drive down the street, and you have that 1950s to early 1960s look of the asbestos shingles on the side of the house. And they were usually used to re-side. I mean, this was sort of the vinyl siding of 1958, wasn't it? I mean, Vinyl siding hadn't. So you had to have something to go over this old peeling wood that you had on your house. So you went to asbestos because the salesman said it'll last forever. And he was more or less right. So if you have it on your house, the problem that I'm running into when I do home inspections, Larry, is the asbestos shingles got to look sort of rough. So they went over them with vinyl siding.
Oh.
Well, you can't drive a nail through asbestos, so you drill a hole. Well, you've now made your asbestos friable. So now the question is, how much friable asbestos do we have laying in the yard and around the house? So you really want to either preserve or remove the asbestos shingles. And preservation is very simple. You paint it. If you keep it painted, then the salesman is pretty much right. It will last more or less forever. The other thing that we see still on old houses is asbestos roof shingles. Some of them were put on in the 1920s, and they're still
there.
They're still there because, again, they don't deteriorate except a long-term exposure to water. The asbestos never deteriorates, but the cement does. So we had a mansion here in Madison where I looked at the roof shingles, and they look sort of ratty. So they sampled at the base of the downspouts and found that asbestos was running off the roof into the gutters down to the downspout and polluting the yard.
Oh, my goodness.
Fortunately, that was sort of a high-end product, so we don't see a lot of those. But the siding that you mentioned, we certainly see a great deal of that. So we have to be very careful consumers if we're thinking about residing our house, and we probably actually want to remove it.
So how do you find a reliable company, regardless in terms of removal?
I think basically you look online, and because they have to be accredited and licensed as asbestos abatement specialist. And I don't think it's something most contractors are going to lie about, but you do have to have, you can't just have your local carpenter tear it off.
Gotcha. Mary in Mayville has a related question, I believe. Mary, hello.
Hi. Well, I think when the house was built in 1917, there's an old, and we had steam heat radiators and, you know, an old furnace, so it's all been, the furnace is no longer there. But I feel that one of the pipes in the back basement is probably, I wouldn't be surprised if that's covered with asbestos. And then I know, you know, in the attic, probably somebody ought to look at the attic, because I think there's something up there, too. And so where do I start to have somebody come and look at this?
Well, you can have an asbestos abatement firm come in, but that can be a little bit expensive. The other thing you can do is you can call a local home inspector and say, do you know enough about these materials to tell me if I might have an issue? Now, a home inspector is not going to say, Mary, you have asbestos. I know a lot about asbestos. I can't even tell you that. What I'm going to say is, you have presumed asbestos-containing material, PACM. And that's what I put in my reports. And so a home inspector can come in, look at the pipes and say, Mary, yeah, it sure looks a lot like aerosol asbestos. And they go up in the attic and say, well, you originally had a little bit of cellulose, and then 1950s, somebody dumped vermiculite in your attic. So they probably can tell you if you have an issue. If you have nothing that, and most home inspectors know what asbestos isn't. Mm. So then you go in your attic and say, okay, you got some cellulose from 1917, inch and a half of it. Then you got 6 inches of mineral wool, and then somebody put bats over the top. Well, none of those contain asbestos. So I think I would maybe start there. You can go to the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors website, WAHI, and look for people in your area. You can also go to the American Society of Home Inspectors and look for people in your area. And most of us have profiles on those websites, so you can look at it and get some idea whether this is somebody who's been around for a while and might have a little bit more expertise, you know, than a newbie. But some home inspectors are just going to say, Mary, I don't do that.
Yeah.
And in which case, if there's nobody in the Mayville area, you may have to find an abatement contractor who'll come and look at it for you.
And would Mary or anybody else be helped by, you've got a little publication or a little sheet on asbestos. Would she be helped by something like that?
Well, we mentioned early the Gray Zonolite Attic Insulation Trust. Mm-hmm. And so if it is vermiculite, now just because it's vermiculite, as I said earlier, Larry, it was only one mine in Montana that had asbestos in with the mica rock. The other mm-hmm. mines had mica rock, no asbestos. So you might have vermiculite, and it's just fine. So don't go ahead and remove it unless you test it. So if you do have vermiculite, excuse me, you do test it, has asbestos, you can get financial help in removing it.
Mary, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Laura in Grand Marsh. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I own a 1959 Vindale mobile home. I was just like that he would have opinions on whether mobile homes are having a problem with this too. I know it's an older mobile home, so mm-hmm. they probably do. Anyhow.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not that familiar with mobile homes, but a lot of the places, one of the things about asbestos is it's heavy. So you're not going to have a drywall generally in a mobile home. You're not going to have asbestos shingles. You're not going to have asbestos siding. You probably don't even have asbestos floor tile. It might be a little pipe wrap or something. But I think the likelihood of having asbestos in a mobile home, not that I know a lot about mobile homes. I mean, I've inspected mobile homes, but I've actually stopped doing that. So there is a possibility that you have it there, and I guess we can give the same advice to Mary is find a home inspector who maybe has a specialty in mobile homes, and there are guys out there who really, guys mm-hmm. and women, who specialize in mobile homes. And if not, I would look through it. If you don't see anything that looks like asbestos or like the things we're talking about in the air here today, I would just sort of rest easy.
Laura, thank you so much for calling. A listener called in, couldn't stay online, but wondered, what do you mean by friable and non-friable?
Good question, Larry. So a friable is defined, basically, dust is friable. Concrete isn't. You can make concrete into dust by drilling it. So basically, if it can get into the air and you can breathe it in, it's friable.
Okay. Makes sense. All right. Carolyn in La Crosse, we'll go to you next. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I have a tile floor that's squares, and I've been taking it up because it's bad. The glue is so hard to remove. How do you get the glue?
Well, maybe you don't. Okay, and Carolyn, thank you for asking that question, because the situation, if you have VAT tile, asbestos-containing tile, you probably have asbestos-containing mastic. In some ways, the mastic is more dangerous than the tile, because mm-hmm. if you scrape it, it becomes friable. So are these like 9-inch by 9-inch tile, or are they larger?
And they're larger than 9-inch.
Okay, there were 12 by 12 tiles that were VAT tiles, but most 12-inch tiles are vinyl tiles. So there, obviously you're going to put down a new floor, aren't you?
Well, I've got a hardwood floor underneath it. The other thing I was...
Oh, so you're trying to get down to the hardwood.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you're going to need somebody who really is a specialist in removing old mastics. And, of course, we have a hardwood, so we don't want to try to dissolve things. And scraping may damage the hardwood. So that's sort of a tough one. I think what I would do is talk to some local hardwood floor refinishers in the La Crosse area. And there are dozens in the La Crosse area. And one or two of those men or women are going to say, yep, I've run into that before. Here's what we're going to do. So start with the guy who restores the floors, because he has maybe run into the same problem, and ask him to come and look at it, or her to come and look at it, and get their professional advice.
Yeah, I think that's good advice there. Good luck, Carolyn. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And an email from Paul. He has this a house that was built in 1928, remodeled in the 50s. They have asbestos floor tile in the basement and asbestos wallboard on the furnace side of the utility room. As long as they disclose this to a future buyer, can you foresee any reason that this would prevent the sale of a home?
That's verging on a legal question, but I think you want to discuss this with your real estate broker, who is going to know more than I. I'm a member of the Wisconsin Association of Realtors, but I'm not a licensed broker. But certainly you protect yourself if you disclose a possible issue. Now, again, the tile most likely is... You don't want to call it asbestos. You want to call it PACM, presumed asbestos-containing material. So you can say, we've got some presumed asbestos-containing material in our house. If the tile is in good shape, if the transite board in the furnace room is in good shape, just say, it appears to be in good shape and non-friable. That's what I would do, but get the advice of your broker, and if your broker doesn't know, he or she is going to call their local attorney and say exactly what should we put in the real estate condition report. And, Larry, I just want to go off on a very slight tangent here.
Sure. Go ahead.
Because real estate condition reports right now are the source of many, many lawsuits. Mm-hmm. So doing a really good job disclosing everything you know about the house is really important in a real estate transaction, so that once the house is sold, you're not getting a demand letter from an attorney 5 months later because they've suddenly discovered X, Y, or Z, and they're pretty sure you knew about it. So very important to have a good ethical broker and to really think about the real estate condition report. The other thing I find in the reports, Larry, especially with Section B, there's like 15 or 17 things to check and a little tiny line to write things. It's completely inadequate. If you're going to sell your house and you really want to disclose things, write something up and append it to the report. I mean, most of our listeners are pretty smart, Larry, and they know what's going on in their house, at least if they listen to the second Thursday of the month to Chad and myself and others. And just take a little bit of extra time, be fair with the buyer, and really disclose things and head off any future problems.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to be coming in and serving as an expert witness, perhaps.
Yes, unfortunately. I'm doing that way more than I want to be doing it.
Gerald in Rhinelander, what's on your mind?
Hi. I had a question about transite water mains. Does your guest know anything about that and whether there's a danger when they're replaced or removed?
I'm sorry, Gerald, I didn't quite catch all of that.
What was it? Some sort of water main, right?
Transite, is that the...
Oh, transite, transite paneling, mother. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a transite water mains, assuming they might have asbestos also.
Yes. Generally, the assumption is that anything that has the word transite associated with it is a presumed asbestos-containing material and then would need to be tested.
So there are cities, I know Watertown's one, where they're doing a lot of water main replacement.
Yes. Anything that old transite pipes at this point are eroding and are an issue. So I think that if they are known, the municipality or the owner of the service extension is well advised to replace them.
John in Shawano County, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Good morning. See, a family just built a new vacation home on a lake in Shawano County, all sandy soil. And the house includes, we didn't discover this until after it was built, it includes a radon system in the crawl space that's running all the time, you know. And the builder explained that this is used because the houses today are so tight that they use it to bring makeup air. And I'd never heard of that. I just wonder if your guests would comment on, is this a common practice or something unusual? Or
so it's a radon system that's built within the house itself? Or is this
correct,
something like an air-to-air heat exchanger?
It's a separate, it looks just like a radon system you'd add to a house, an old home. It's in the basement.
Yeah.
And he said it's just to use to bring makeup air into the house because the house is so tight nowadays.
Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? Now, the question is, if this is a typical radon removal system, there probably is a poured concrete slab in the crawl space to seal the soil. And then the radon pipe would penetrate that slab to pick up radon that is underneath the concrete and the vapor barrier, because the concrete has to have a vapor barrier, and probably insulation as well. But that is depressurizing underneath the concrete slab. So that is not going to have any effect on air change in the house.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
If they're simply drawing air out of the crawl space, that doesn't make any sense at all. Because what they're doing is depressurizing the crawl space, and if there isn't a concrete floor, that is increasing the radon because it's drawing out of the soil. So without seeing it, John, I can't go much further than that, but I'm a little perplexed as well. I'm not sure exactly how that is working.
You might need to go back to that person that you talked to and ask for more clarifications based on what John just told you.
Right. And certainly, Larry, your point about air-to-air heat exchangers is well taken because our houses really are getting tight now. And if we're in Shawano County in a damp area near, you know, Shawano Lake or one of the other lakes or the marshlands up there, It really would be nice to have some fresh air changes in the house. And I don't design new houses anymore, and I don't design HVAC systems anymore. But when I did, basically there was an air-to-air heat exchanger in everything that I looked at.
Yeah, and what do they call them now? That's the old name for it, air-to-air heat exchanger.
Now they're called heat recovery vent systems.
That's
yes.
Right.
Heat recovery vent systems, yes.
So he and Johnny may have been talking about that and just slipped and said radon, but...
Possible. And of course, if you have just a little radon in the house, one can use a heat recovery vent system or air exchanger basically to lower the radon. Because you can end up with houses where it is really hard to figure out where the radon's coming from. Mm. And if it's like at, 4.5, 5 picocuries per cubic deciliter, do we want to put in a radon system or do we want to spend the money on something that is going to improve the air quality in general plus reduce the radon?
Yeah, that makes sense. John, good luck. Thank you. Catherine in Wausau has a radon question as well. Let's go there. Hi.
Okay. Funny you should be talking about radon because that's my question. I'm talking about an older home, and the radon levels are high. And would that be coming from the concrete basement walls?
Well, Catherine, what do you mean by high?
What is a normal? I think it's above 5.
Okay, well, but 20 is above 5, and 5.5 is above 5. So how high it is really determines sometimes the approach. Now, if you're in Wausau and you're near exposed granite, fissured exposed granite, you may have indeed very high radon. So the first thing to do is to get a very accurate test. The problem with radon testing is every day is different. So when I have houses where I suspect we may have radon issues, I mean, there are houses where you know you have radon issues, and then you say, go ahead and do a 48-hour test, because I know we're going to be saying to them, you need to remediate. But if it's a little questionable, I suggest people do a 6-month test, midsummer to midwinter, midwinter to midsummer, because on days when the windows are open in June, radon's really low. January, it may be really high, and that gives you a real idea what's going on. And then you have to have, if it is really high, you're going to have a good contractor look at the house, determine how porous the walls are. A poured concrete wall is different than a concrete block wall. Wood foundations are different than masonry or poured concrete foundations. So there's a lot of different things. The condition of the basement floor makes a big difference. If you've got an old house and the basement floor is sort of crumbly, a lot of radon's coming through. And sometimes if you replace that floor by pouring over it with a vapor barrier, you can greatly reduce the radon in the house. So again, as Larry and I were discussing earlier, the idea of heat recovery vent systems or air exchange versus radon extraction is something that you have to figure out and what is going to be best for your house and your health over the long term. And that takes a little bit of scientific discovery.
Yeah. Catherine, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. John in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Hi, John. Question. I want to get one of those, a blank form, the homeowner's condition report. How do I go about getting a blank form?
Oh, a real estate condition report, you should be able to just go online and you can pick one up. I would expect to even go to the Wisconsin Realtors Association website. I'm pretty sure they're going to have them, but it's a very, very common form. So if you just Google Wisconsin Real Estate Condition Report, I'm pretty sure you're going to find them.
Yeah, I would agree. John, thank you. Good luck. And Ditter in Pewaukee, on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Peter?
Oh, Peter? Sorry. Go ahead, yeah. Peter.
That's okay. My daughter lives in a very old home in Milwaukee, and I suspect that there is some asbestos around this one particular pipe. am I able to, first of all, have it tested? If it tests positive for asbestos, am I able to purchase the paint and paint it myself to make it safe?
Oh, my. what a question to ask on the air. Of course not. Peter, in real life, I had asbestos-wrapped steam pipes in my old house in Tacoma. And I got an asbestos-approved paint, and I did it myself. But everything was absolutely safe. I mean, the cloth wrapping was there. There were none of these funny plaster Paris corners. So you really have to sort of do risk analysis. I mean, the best thing to do is to call an immediate remediation firm and have them take a look at it. It's when you get into asbestos, do it yourself can become a disaster, because if you knock something down, it's on the floor and it's in the air, all of a sudden we may have an expensive cleanup where simply having somebody come in and paint your pipes for you might have been less expensive. So let's get some professional advice from somebody who can actually visit your house. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay. There you go, Peter. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Rich emailed, he currently has an oil-fired furnace as well as water heater. He's looking to replace both, going to natural gas. A contractor suggested that an electric tank heater with heat pump is the most efficient option versus a natural gas on-demand water heater. What's your opinion?
I think a contractor may be right. I think, Larry, in 20 years, we're not going to be putting natural gas in any place. And it is going to be a thing of the past. We are going to be seeing all of our water heating and our space heating and cooling is all going to be electric. I would double check, get the recommendation from the contractor, and then go online and take a look at the efficiency of the heat pump. The heat pumps are so much better than they were 10 and 15 years ago. They work at much lower temperature. They have much higher efficiency. But it sounds like he's working with an HVAC contractor that is really up on new technology. So as we always say, trust but verify. Mm-hmm. Get the suggestions to the contractor, do some online research, and if it seems to bear out what the contractor is telling you, be thankful that you found a firm that really knows what they're doing.
Thanks for that question. John Freiberger, our guest today of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg. Join in again. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, talking home improvement. We've zeroed in on asbestos, but we're certainly taking other questions as well. And I hope you'll join in. You can email at ideas@wpr.org. Our lines are pretty much all filled right now, but the number is 800-642-1234. And let's take a call. Jeff in West Salem, it's your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, I got a quick story that's going to make John cringe. In the 70s, I was working construction. We were turning part of a warehouse into individual storage cubicles. We were installing rows of overhead doors. When we put the doors up, they hit the steam pipes at the top of the rise, and we went through with straight claw hammers and knocked all the insulation off so that the doors would open up. It was so white in there, you couldn't hardly see across the cubicle.
Oh, my goodness.
And all the little fibers, you could see the little fibers in the air. The air was so full, we had to go outside and smoke a cigarette.
Oh, good. We're smoking at the same time. Well, Jeff, we all, you know, Christmas is coming up, right? So we've got a whole bunch of Christmas movies that we're going to be seeing from the 1940s and 1950s. And guess what they used on the set for snow? That same snow you saw inside that you developed with the claw hammer. So when you watch It's a Wonderful Life, they are wading and sledding through asbestos.
Oh!
Nowadays, they use marble dust, which isn't quite as bad. But, you know, as I said before, Larry, asbestos was this wonder fiber.
Yeah.
And they used to make children's nightgowns out of chrysotile asbestos. So if your little girl stood too close to the wood stove, her cotton nightgown wouldn't catch fire. So asbestos was considered to be safe, an exemplary building product, something that would last forever.
Oh,
unless hit with Jeff's claw hammer.
Sherry in Madison, it's your turn now. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Larry and John. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. I wanted to just build. I'm with Extension. I'm a state energy specialist, and I wanted to build on the caller who called in about the heat pump water heater,
mm-hmm.
and to say that you're absolutely right. Everything that is being done now is trying to move all HVAC equipment to electrification. And I just wanted to add that there is a focus on energy rebate, a state rebate for people who put in heat pump water heaters. There's also a federal one starting next year, and that's through the IRA bill, the Bipartisan Inflation Reduction Act.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so it's the same for air source heat pumps for mm-hmm. air conditioning and for heating. And they're so much more efficient. I put in a Rood Rheem heat pump water heater last year, and it's fabulous, and it's four times more efficient than a natural gas one.
Excellent. Wow. Yeah, thank you for calling in. One note, though, I believe that not all of the state is covered by Focus on Energy because your utility has to participate. So next year when we get the federal credits, that's going to help a lot because there are people that have like a rural cooperative electrical distribution. Mm-hmm. They're not members of Focus, and so they can't get the rebates. Mm-hmm. But next year, the entire state of Wisconsin will be able to access the federal program.
Yeah, that's great. Sherry, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Matt in Weston will give you a chance. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I was having an issue with the radon.
In your house?
Yeah.
And how did you test it, and what level did you get?
So I was getting like 12, like about high 11s, 12s, and then I have a radon pump in there. If I don't let the radon pump run constantly, it'll get up to like 13.
Okay, so the radon pump is doing the radon extraction pump is doing some good, but it is not getting it down to where you're really safe.
Yeah.
So we really need some further examination, and this is a problem. The retrofit systems sometimes work and sometimes they don't, and I've seen a lot mm-hmm. of systems. I look at it and I go, that doesn't work. And did you install it, or was that in place when you purchased the house, Matt?
No, I put it in, and it was just like kind of quick because I had to do something, and I didn't like chip a sump. But the weird thing is, it's like I put the radon meter in the garage just to see what I would get, you know, and left the garage closed, and there's like no radon there.
Well, there's gonna be a little tiny bit, but not much. There's radon everywhere.
Yeah.
But the thing is, in the U.S., we say 3.8 picocuries per cubic deciliter. In Europe, it's 2.5.
Hmm.
And I usually am shooting for 2.5. I think it probably would behoove you. I think you're going to be able to talk to a couple radon contractors. And usually these men and women will talk to you without charge and tell them the issue that you have, because it sounds as if what you have is not working well. Now, is this 10-11 upstairs or 10-11 in the basement?
Well, it's in the basement, but the furnace is in the basement, so
right.
It blows the air all through the house.
Generally, the level on the first floor and second floor, and if you have a third floor, the third floor, is going to be lower than the basements, but still, I wouldn't rely upon it. The basement gives you your worst case, and I like to see basements below 3. So I think you want to consult with a couple of professionals, see if they all give you the same advice, or maybe they're going to give you 3 different pieces of advice, and you're going to have to figure out which one is best.
Yeah, you're going to have to talk to somebody there, Matt.
But take care of it, because it is a cancer risk.
Yeah. Myrna in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Myrna.
Hi. We have a 2-day-old furnace, and I'm noticing the volume of the fan and the furnace when it's in operation is loud. It's like we have a semi-truck in our basement. And I'm wondering if the homeowner, I mean, I didn't look into this, and we haven't been in contact yet that was going to happen today with the installers, with the people we bought it from. But is that typical of a new high-efficiency furnace, that it's so loud?
No, it isn't at all. The new high-efficiency furnaces really have wonderful components to them. So it could be that the fan, which was probably made by somebody other than, you know, you might have a Carrier furnace, but the fan was made by somebody else, Fasco or somebody, and maybe we got one bad fan or something's out of balance. But my guess is your contractors can come in and go, okay, I've seen this before. Here's what we're going to change out, and I think that'll get taken care of. You're not going to have silent operation, but you're going to have quiet. You're going to have quiet operation. You need to move a certain amount of air across the heating coils to have the efficiency. So, and depending upon the type of furnace, I mean, there are furnaces that are variable flame, variable speed fan, one flame, variable speed fan, one flame, one fan. So part of it depends upon what you bought. And I like variable, where I may have a furnace that if you crank it all the way up, it's 100,000 BTUs, but if you only need 30, it's only producing 30. And instead of running, you know, 12,000 CFM, it's running 3,000 CFM. So really shop for furnaces. I mean, as Sherry mentioned earlier, as long as we have furnaces, and maybe start shopping electric heat pumps.
Yeah.
Because they are going to be even quieter.
Myrna, there you go. Thank you for calling. Daryl in Menominee Falls, your turn. Hi, Daryl.
Yes, thank you. I recently purchased a 1907 farmhouse, and I'm renovating the inside. But when I get to the outside, I like to put vinyl siding over what is a white slate siding on the house right now. I'm wondering if, and I'm concerned if that's asbestos or not, any asbestos in that siding. So my question is, if I do put siding over it, would it be better to screw into it versus nailing into it, or would it be good to put a fan fold covering over it before I put the vinyl siding on?
The fan fold would be better, but basically you can't drill it. If you drill it, then you are making it friable. I, as expensive as it is, well, maybe it isn't that expensive because it is a class 2. I would talk to about an abatement firm about taking it off. What you really need to think about long term is you're out in the country. You're probably paying a lot per BTU for your heat. You're probably not on city natural gas. And as Sherry said, you maybe want to take a look at electric heat and cooling later. But you really want to get this house insulated. And that is complicated. And you may want to talk to Focus on Energy and have a consultant come out and really take a look at it. If we had fan fold to the outside and that lowers the permeability of the wall to 0.6, are we going to get condensation in your side of your wall and get mold? Is that condensation going to rust the nails on a balloon frame house and cause your house becomes unstable long term? And there's a lot of things to consider here. You need to keep the inside of these walls dry, and you need to keep the house warm. If you do remove the asbestos siding and probably the wood siding underneath, it'll give you a chance to put 1 or 2 inches of closed cell, like a urethane foam, R7.2 per inch, on the exterior of this house. So the insides of your walls never hit the dew point.
Mm.
You never have to worry about mold in those walls. You don't have to worry about rust in those walls. So this sounds like this is a pretty good-sized project. So I would do a little bit of research, a little bit of thinking, talk to focus on energy person or somebody who does thermal designing. They can actually tell you what the temperature is going to be in each element of that outside wall depending upon what you do on the exterior. And the other thing to think about is if you're using urethane insulation on the exterior, you can tape and seal the joints so that you can have an effective weather-resistant barrier. Because vinyl siding, remember, is a rain screen. It doesn't keep the water out.
Yeah.
So whatever you put up has got to keep the water out. Fanfold does not keep the water out.
There you go, Daryl. Thank you so much. John Freiberger, our guest. He'll be with us right up till 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with John. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at home improvement with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. John's been with us for a long time and does a great job answering your questions. And we have a lot of questions, a lot of callers online, so I think we'll go right to the phones and to Diane in New Berlin. Diane, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. It's Diane here in New Berlin, and thank you for your show. I have a geothermal system, and we installed it back in 2007. We've been very happy with the results of the heating and cooling, especially the cooling is phenomenal. However, you know, the box doesn't last forever, but the geothermal field lasts for decades. My question to your guest is, if we're going to look at replacing the furnace itself sometime in the future, should I consider a heat pump instead, or should I stick with the geothermal since it already has a field installed?
Ooh, that's sort of a tough one because you've really got to do sort of a long-term economic analysis based upon the costs. So I think you're going to need to talk to a geothermal specialist who really knows a lot. Now, the other thing that's happened since 2007 is the transfer units for geothermal are better than they used to be as well. Everything is becoming much more efficient. My guess is that you're going to end up keeping the geothermal system in operation, but that's a guess at this point. So you're going to need to talk to somebody who really does that sort of work. I've worked to install a few, but that is not a specialty of mine. You're going to want to talk to an ASHRAE engineer, American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning. And you may actually be able to go like to the ASHRAE site or a couple of other sites and take a look at cost-benefit analysis for electric furnaces versus geothermal.
Yeah. And Diana, I have a system as well in my home, and the cooling is unbelievable. Heating, it works, but the cooling really, really saves a bunch of money and is very good. There you go. Thanks for calling. Philip in Trempolo, on to you now. Hi, Philip.
Good morning. I guess it's afternoon now. I would like to know, we built a home in 2002 and had in-floor water heat installed with the water heater being the source. And at about 10 years, the tank in that water heater leaked. And, of course, it's a heavy-duty water heater, and it cost us about $3,000 to replace that. It's a gas water heater, and when you talked about the heat pump water heater as a possible replacement, because we're coming back up on 10 years again, could I substitute this gas water heater with that heat pump system with the in-floor heat being, you know, the consideration.
Yes, certainly for heating. In-floor heat for cooling doesn't work very well because of condensation issues. But certainly with all of the changes that we're having and with at some point natural gas becoming a thing of the past, it may be worth investigating. Again, you're going to want to talk to an engineer who really knows something. You're going to want to do your research. You can even start online and take a look at some of the things and the various efficiencies that they offer. What we're finding is we're having great increases in efficiency as the entire, the entire Western world. I mean, at some point in 10 years, we're not going to have natural gas in Europe. And it is all going to become electric, and that will happen in the U.S. as well. So things are moving forward by leaps and bounds. The question is, you're going to be somewhat early adopter, but not dead early. So I do a little bit of research, and I'm 99% sure that you're probably going to be happy with something that is electric. Take a look at the cost differential. Take a look at your cost per BTU differential. Because depending upon where you are, I mean, certainly people that are in old-fashioned fuel oil, electricity is going to beat it every time. Depending upon your natural gas source, if you're on natural gas, then you have to look at it a little bit more in detail. If you're on LP, electricity is going to beat LP almost every time. So do your research, do your long-term cost-benefit analysis, and you may even find that the electrical system is going to have a longer than a 10-year life. Check the warranties, because generally no one warranties longer than they expect it to last. And if you're seeing equipment out there with 15, 20-year warranties, that's going to give you an idea that you're going to get 15 or 20 years out of it.
Yeah. There you go, Philip. Thank you very much for calling. Christina in Glenwood City, your turn. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I have a heated horse barn and a tack room. And I have two questions regarding it. This year, we have moldy saddles, harness, and leather. I'm wondering, one question, what precautions should we take when cleaning this moldy leather? And the second question is, will installing a ceiling fan in the tack room prevent this mold from reoccurring?
Okay, second part first, no. Ceiling fan will do absolutely nothing. In fact, it might increase the mold. What you have, because you've got a horse barn, you have large creatures breathing out a huge amount of moisture. So you're always going to have a humidity problem. Now, one possibility, if your tack room is fairly well sealed, is to simply put a dehumidifier in the tack room that even runs during the winter.
Hmm.
And so let's get the humidity lowered. To grow mold on a saddle, you need between 65 and 80% humidity, and usually it's closer to 80%, and that's wet.
Yeah.
So other things, including your walls, might mold at that. So I would start with a cheap solution, which would be an efficient dehumidifier of decent size. And again, you can go to Focus on Energy and see what's good and what isn't. Get that in your tack room. Make sure your tack room is relatively well sealed. And I think that that should take care of your mold problems. As far as generally, if you're cleaning saddles, you're going to be using Lexol cleaner or something like that. So you're using a liquid. It's not like you're brushing the mold into the air where you're going to breathe it. You're cleaning it up with a wet cloth, and then you're going to wash those wet cloths. So you should therefore not be exposing yourself to mold. If you have any kind of sinus or breathing issues, wear an N95 mask, the type that you can pinch on your nose that's nice and tight to make sure that you don't take in any mold spores that you don't wish to. Does that cover it?
Yeah, I think that does. Thank you, Christina, for calling. Appreciate it. Mary in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have a question. I live in a stucco house, okay? It's stucco over cement block, and it is plaster and lath. So it's like a fortress. But some of the stucco on the outside has some cracks. And previously when there was a crack, I would seal it up with like clear silicone.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that should be done? I would love to just have it, you know, like resealed.
Yeah.
know, but that's probably not in the budget.
Well, don't use clear silicone. It really doesn't work. Better off filling the cracks. If you go to, let me just put my thinking cap on here for a moment here. Department of Interior, Division of Historic Restoration has a stucco fact sheet. Now, I don't know whether your house is lime-based stucco, which I'm more familiar with, or Portland cement-based stucco, but I believe that it's called preservation briefs. So Google preservation briefs, Department of Interior, and I think you're going to find some stucco technical bulletins that you can download. What I have done on Portland cement houses is I've used a toothbrush and I've used tile grout. And I basically have painted the tile grout over the cracks and then brushed it with a toothbrush so you couldn't see it. And then some stucco you can paint, some you can't paint. And I believe the preservation brief is going to talk about painting or not painting, or if it is a sand lime stucco, painting it with a calcimine type paint. But start there. That may give you some pretty good information.
Yeah. Good luck, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Renee emailed to ask if a whole house humidifier is a good option.
No. The last thing we need in our house is more humidity. Now, if your house is really dry, okay, that's a problem. If your house, and it's a problem not just because it's dry and your hands are cracking and your nose bleeds. It's dry because you've got too many air changes going on with your house, and then you really need to get an energy audit done to find out why your house is so dry. Because the problem with running into modern houses that are well sealed is they're too wet. Because we go in the house and breathe, and the plants are breathing, and the dog and the cat breathe, and the house is humidified. So you need to look at this systemically. I would start with an energy audit and find out how much this house leaks. What they're going to do is they're going to put a calibrated fan in your front door. They're going to depressurize the house to 50 pascals, if they can get there. Sometimes they can't. And they're going to tell you how much air change you have, and then they're going to tell you how to fix it. And then they're going to tell you where you can get rebates to help with it. So I would do that. Let's get some science behind it.
There you go. When you mentioned dogs and cats, I was thinking about the study that was done on two homes that were identical in terms of their energy, and they both had families of four. But the one was spending more money on heating and air conditioning, and they finally realized that the difference was the one family had a dog and the other one didn't. And the dog was in and out all the time.
So the doors were always open. Okay.
Oh, man. John in Mount Horeb, we'll go to you. Hi, John.
Yes, thank you. I would like to inquire about the value of air duct cleaning. It seems that there's a lot of advertisements out there, you know, talking about all the terrible things that can happen if you don't clean your air ducts. But then from other people, I've heard that that's really not necessary. So I'm curious about the thoughts here.
Yeah, air duct cleaning can indeed be beneficial if the cleaners actually clean the ducts, which 50% of the time they do. So you've got to work with somebody who's really, really reliable. Sometimes a remediation company that does mold remediation, they're going to charge a little bit more than, you know, Smith & Son air duct cleaners, but they're actually going to get it clean. And the other thing is you need to do a post-cleaning inspection yourself. Usually there's places with a mirror and a flashlight you can see down into the ducts. You may ask them. Most of these guys have fiber optics. So you can say, look, would you please give me a fiber optic CD, thumb drive, or whatever, of what it looks like before and what it looks like after. So trust but verify.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Thanks a lot, John. Jack emailed, he has an older house with asbestos siding. He'd like to take it off. Is there any cost-sharing program for removal of asbestos? How might he get rid of it?
Yeah, there is no program that I know about for removing the asbestos hardboard shingles. As far as getting rid of it, There's federal rules and there's also state rules. And I don't know what the state rule is currently. It used to be fairly lax because it was considered to be non-friable. And what I'm recalling is it could be double bagged and put in a standard landfill rather than being hauled to, I think it was Fort Atkinson was the closest landfill that could take asbestos. So I think what I would do is, I'm not sure where Jeff lives, but if he's in a city or a municipality that's got a building inspection department, I think a call to the local building inspector is often very helpful because a lot of these guys, if they don't know it, they're going to look it up for you, and they know where to look. I mean, you can certainly go to the EPA site and look there. You can look at the Wisconsin site, try to find out what the rules and regulations are. But you're going to want to get a building permit for this anyway. So let's go ahead and call the local jurisdiction having authority and ask the question.
Rita emailed to ask why so many Lannan stone homes have black streaks coloring in the stone as they age.
I think that's just sort of surface non-green plant growth. And in many cases, you can wash it off if you scrub it off carefully. A lot of the Lannan stone homes were built in the late 20s through the 30s into the early 40s. I mean, Nacoma and Madison is sort of famous for them. A lot of those walls are holding up very well. Be very careful about how you wash them. Do not pressure wash them. The mortar is usually a lime-based mortar, which is why they've lasted, because that mortar expands and contracts with heat and humidity. So approach it carefully. There are some masons in town that you can, some masons in Madison you can talk to. I don't know where Rita is from, so she may wish to do some inquiries.
Norma emailed, her garage in her 1940s home has an oil change disposal hole in the cement floor.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably oil in the soil under the cement floor.
So it's got a dirt floor.
Well, no, it's a cement floor.
Okay.
But there's a hole in the cement.
Somebody's just poured things down there. Oh, dear.
Yeah. How do you have that remediated?
Is it
necessary? You got to break up the cement floor in order to remove the contaminated soil? Where do you start to correct the situation?
Yeah. So that may have been a hole just for drainage. And then again, you know, Fred and Elmer, when they were changing the Ford's oil, may have dumped it down the floor. We don't know. I think what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to look to somebody to do an environmental test. They're probably going to stick a rod down there, do a soil sample. If there's not much of it, then I don't think we really have a worry. Now, maybe she's thinking of filling this with gravel and then cementing over the top. If there's a whole bunch of oil down there, that's really a problem. But I think she's going to have to talk to somebody who can take a soil sample, have it analyzed, and get an idea to what extent we have oil pollution, if any. And certainly proving the null hypothesis would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about the real estate condition reports.
If you
got a plume of hydrocarbons underneath your garage and you sell the house and the new owners find out about it, you got a problem. So let's get some competent professional help and see if they can tell you what sort of problem you have and then what is the solution.
Scott emailed, he's replacing his old bathtub and shower. It's the only bathroom in the house. He wants to know if replacing with just a shower will hurt resale value.
Okay, and I can't answer the resale value part. In fact, home inspectors are specifically told by law, don't talk about it. But I can give you a personal opinion. And that is, you know, there's a lot of new stuff out there. There's walk-in tubs with doors. There's thises, there's thats. If I were doing this on my house or my daughter's house, I would put in something that used to exist, and I think it still exists, Larry, but there used to be these little square bathtubs that you could put a shower in, and they were only like 4 foot long. And my guess is that that probably exists in acrylic. I think I would call the plumbing contractor and say, look, I need some sort of bathtub in here because the dog doesn't like showers. I don't have much room. But what can you sell me?
And if it has one bathroom, it's probably a smaller house, and that may appeal to new home buyers who are young and maybe have a baby or a very young kid, and I know my realtor said you need to have a bathtub. She said you should have a bathtub in at least one in the house.
I think that's sage. I think it's sage and pretty standard advice, but there's a lot of things out there that are available, Scott. So talk to a good plumber, look online, and then come up with something that at least is a shallow tub, so we've got some use for the baby or the dog, depending on how you're inclined.
Joyce emailed her, some of her heat runs show signs of some paper coating that was removed by previous owners. They discover that whatever had been removed previously was not removed on the top of the duct close to the ceiling. Is it likely it may be asbestos-related?
Depending upon the age of Joyce's house, if the house is from the teens or the 20s, a lot of asbestos-reinforced paper was used at that point to keep the ducts warmer. And the reason they did that, Larry, is they didn't have furnace fans. So we had these old, we used to call them octopuses, these giant gravity furnaces, and we had to keep the air warm. So we need to have an asbestos remediation expert come in and take a look at this paper. They also have to look where it was removed, because the paper may not have been friable, but when they removed the paper, they may have left friable asbestos on the ducts that needs to be cleaned up. That should not be a terribly expensive job, but it's going to be well worth doing.
And, John, how's your website doing? Your website is educatedhomeowner.net.
You know, I'm sort of hoping that things slow down because I have so much more stuff to put on there. I mean, there's a lot on there now, but I have even more. I'm constantly developing new things through this program, and then our listeners email me, and I have to go out and do research. So I'm hoping January and February I can get my wife really engaged in adding to the website. But it is there to help our listeners. And we have lots of links and lots of things you can download. And as I always say, if you're hiring somebody, go to my website, get the installation instructions, or get them online if it's not on my website, and review the installation instructions before you have the installer come so you know it's done right.
And then give them a copy of the installation.
Right, because often they've never seen it before.
Oh, John, I tell you what, I learned a lot today, including those old movies that use asbestos in for snow.
It's amazing that any Hollywood stars ever live past the age of 50 because they all smoked as well.
Oh, it's a wonderful life. Well, it wouldn't have been a wonderful life if you were breathing that in too much. John Freiberger, our guest today, his website is educatedhomeowner.net. And just by way of full disclosure, Freiberger Consulting is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. So pretty cool as well. And John will be back in a couple of months, and we'll do this all over again. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll be looking at how to save money, lessen your environmental footprint, and be more sustainable by growing your own food. That's tomorrow at 11 and 6 a.m. on Saturday, or you can go online anytime and listen. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.